Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
And now, the unquestioned leader of the Flab 3, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a busy Tuesday. We've got a lot to get to. Doubleheader for the Royals means we're going to bump up Alec Lewis here into the early part of the show. We'll talk baseball with Alec Lewis from The Athletic. Our Royals insider will be with us. We will have Tim Grunhardt coming up at the 4 o'clock hour. In the 5 o'clock hour, Seth Kizer. So a lot of Chiefs talk. We're also going to hear from everything that went on at camp. In the 3 o'clock today, everybody at the podium, you heard a little taste of that there in the show open. We'll hear more of that in the 3 o'clock hour. Also play There Can Be Only One, kind of a football theme, mostly Chiefs, but I'll call it a football-themed addition to what we're doing. So, you know, that coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Let's do start with a little Royals baseball today. Yet another day for the baby Royals to impress the Kansas City fans as they have a – you know, I think a lot of Royals fans buzzing about all the youth, a couple of young starters. They wouldn't it be great to see a couple of, even if you would lose a game 3-2, at least get a split, but win both of them? Obviously, it would be fantastic how it would come about, but get two crisply pitched games from your Kansas City Royals. How giddy would you be, Curtis, to see that?
Well, considering I'm going out to the yard for game two to get post-game sound, I would really love two really crisply played games because that would get me out of there a little earlier. But, yeah, you've got one guy in Singer who you know is the most important guy. Yes, I definitely want to see him kind of get back on the horse. He had those two great starts. Fell back a little bit the last time. See him get back out there and do well. And Heasley is kind of a wild card, and he's back around. See him keep it rolling in game two. I think there's a lot to be gained by the Royals today.
Where do we sit on what Brady Singer is, right? Are you ready to proclaim that, okay, one of five starters is locked and loaded now that we know that he's not got the day's service time? At least that was the report we got last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I guess it'd be. Last week in my world, you know what I mean? But we got the report that he was not going to have enough service time to qualify for a full year this year. So they've set that back. That means that they've still got three more years with him. Do you feel like you've got 3 years of a legit starting pitcher locked and loaded in Brady Singer? Like where is he, you know, not there but getting close to being that guy? Like where do we sit on whether or not, you know, how many of the five spots of the rotation are filled?
I don't think any of them are filled. Like, yeah, this guy is going to be there. But imagine whatever that goal is, something is in the middle of a series of circles. And as pitchers get closer to that, they move from one circle, one ring, into the ring that's closer, into the ring that's closer. There's only one guy in whatever the closest ring is right now, and it is Brady Singer. He's kind of moved into, I'm not sure how many rings that is away from the man, but right now he's moved into a ring that nobody else has. So I think that's a plus because before a week or a month ago, I didn't think anybody was going to be in whatever ring that is. I think he's still at least one away from, yeah, we've got a guy for the next few years. I still need to see a little bit more, but the vast majority of the input we've gotten from him has been very positive of late.
Yeah. No, and I think that's what we're all waiting for, right? We like what we're seeing out of the position players, although I do want to be clear, there's still work to be done, right? They're not – this is not a championship offense just now. People are excited because they're seeing guys at least show what would we call survival skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, how many guys are – you know, of the youngsters, would you say, okay, you know, is there any of the youngsters that you would say, all right, this guy, I'm good. We've got this spot absolutely filled with a youngster.
Nobody yet, but I think I feel pretty damn good about Witt and eventually Melendez. The numbers haven't quite no one's hitting 320. I mean, they're still, you know, 257 and 236, but I believe those two guys are going to be there. But I don't think anyone you'd say, yep, he's going to be there for sure.
I think what's interesting is, like, if you go, like, okay, what's a championship offense look like? Let me just give you what was the most common batting order for the World Championship Royals and what their OPS looked like that year. 706, Salvador Perez. 822, Eric Hosmer. That's right, 822. 363 on base, 459 slug. He had 18 homers, 93 driven in that year. 552 from Omar Infante. 614 from Alcides Escobar. 817 from Mike Moustakas, 809 from Alex Gordon, 838 from Lorenzo Cain, 640 from Alex Rios, and 847 from Kendrys Morales. A quick look will tell you that five of their nine hitters were over 800. And shockingly, they had three that were below 700, and Salvador Perez that was right at 700. Now, if you want to take one of those guys out, take out Infante, if you will. At the end, Ben Zobrist was in there at an 816. So that's six batters with an 800 OPS. How many batters on the Royals this year have an OPS over 800?
I will tell you zero.
None. Not one. Not one guy has an OPS over 800.
And the top guy's gone.
The top guy's gone. 785 for Andrew Benintendi. Top remaining guy, MJ Melendez at 762. Bobby Witt Jr. at 752. They've still got work to be done. Now, again, encouraging signs. You know, Eric Hosmer had been at it for a few years before he was hanging the 800 OPS up there. I think there's a lot to believe in with the Royals' approach to hitting that they're going to get things done and be ready to go. But, you know, it's definitely going to be something that I think they have to continue to work on, right? Even the best part of the Royals is still a work in progress. The pitching side, that's the side that there's a lot of work to be done, right? And so today, you know, I want to be clear. I bring up the part about the hitting, not to say that, like, oh, they got shut out three games in a row. No big deal, right? That's part of the 17-game stretch since the All-Star break is being shut out for three consecutive games. No, that is a giant deal. That is a giant deal and speaks to the fact that there's still a lot of work to be done, right? Like, that's, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is for them to continue to work and continue to make it fit, right? Like, I think one of the things, and I've heard a lot of people buzzing around town, Joe Spiker, my buddy at Easton Roofing, texted me today. He said, you know, Chiefs camp is open. I can't wait for the first preseason game to be on TV and then to be at home. He said, but he goes around the office, all the guys here at Easton are talking Royals and optimistically. And I think that's a great sign for the ball club. I think it's also a sign of, you know, we love Chiefs camp. We love the Chiefs. And when training camp comes around, we love that it's signaling of football. But, like, the topics, until somebody, frankly, gets hurt or somebody says something completely out of character and either says this guy blows or this guy's great, the topics are few and far between. Now, Jason Anderson did a great one today because I always like it when somebody starts down a road, when I'm listening to sports radio, somebody starts down a road and I go, yeah, got it, know it, you know where this is going. And then they don't go where I think they're going. And that was Jason today. He started down the road of the first depth chart coming out. And how everyone's initial reaction is like, well, this is crap, or how everyone's preconceived notions, you know, come in like, well, they're just trying to motivate this guy. He's really not behind this other guy here. And this guy, you know, that's absolutely the way it looks. And he went through it all, and I was like, okay, yeah, so it's a motivating factor, and we don't read too much into it. No. At the end of the day, he went through it all, and he's like, you can actually read a lot into this first one. He pointed out how many of the spots ended up being dead on for how they started the season. And I was like, wow, okay, I've never actually, you know, done that. Nice little piece of journalism there by one Jason Anderson. I was like, I've never actually gone, okay, let's look at the first depth chart and let's put it against how the season begins. So nice topic there. I like that one. That was great. That was an eye-opener for me that last year's first depth chart ended up being quite the indicator for how the thing was going to go. We'll see. Maybe it was a fluke. Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe Jason will grind through five more tomorrow. I don't know. I'll be listening to The Zone to hear what he comes back with next. But for the large part, at training camp, there's not a whole lot. Like, after it's like, okay, everybody's back. We've heard Patrick Mahomes. We've heard everybody talk. We've asked about the pass rush. Year two of the offensive line being together. Orlando Brown's in camp. We're kind of slow on topics, aren't we? Till we hit, I mean, we'll engineer something. We'll dig back through the history. We'll do comparisons. We'll talk about the cap. We'll find, but just like water cooler talk, what's the topic about the Chiefs right now? It's the same thing it was 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Pass rush, wide receivers.
Yep.
Right? Those are the two things. You dig a little bit deeper, it's like, okay, got to do some work with the defensive backs. Lots of DBs there to choose from and got to replace Tre'Davious Ward. But it's nothing's changed, right? It's not like, well, the pass rush is fixed. That's clear. We've seen how much they put the quarterback down, so we don't have to. It's the same things. And just as the Chiefs are tired of hitting other Chiefs, I think we hit a fatigue part. This is about the Royals, by the way. We hit a fatigue part where we as fans are like, okay, I really need to see you go out and play a game. What we love to analyze are games. Practice is a nice appetizer, but what we want are games. Even preseason games are definitively better than practice, which then takes us back to the Royals, who are playing games, and not only are playing games, they're doing it in a different fashion. They have erased a lot of the guys that frustration was there for, and they are now playing with guys that have ceiling and upside. So optimism has returned, right? We're back to being optimistic. The question for guys like us is to figure out, is the optimism warranted? And I think it is. I think it's warranted in a lot of the guys, a lot of the position guys, with potentially Brady Singer. And I think there's reason for legit optimism for Brady Singer, because he's not a guy who's never gone out and thrown a decent game. He's not Kyle Davies out there, right? He's had some incredibly productive games. So certainly there should be optimism around Brady Singer. The question is, can you say, okay, he's a pillar yet? And I think that's what the rest of this season is about. Like you said, he stepped back last time out, but if he can get back to having a top-shelf game, get 6-plus, 7 innings of less than 3 runs, you know, particularly if it's 2 runs or less, you start to go, okay, here's a guy that not only is going to keep him in games, but can win games. And Jonathan Heasley gets a chance to prove himself, because it's been a rocky road for him. So he gets a chance to start settling in. Two big things for this organization, because if they can hang their hat on, even if it's not Heasley, and, you know, I talked with, David Leskey on Sunday night, and he talked about Heasley maybe not being a starter, but he thought he had the weapons to be a good reliever. Okay, fine. Let's see. I mean, great relievers can often be decent starters, so let's see at least a decent start out of Heasley today. But if Lynch, Bubich, and Singer are going to be guys you can count on, then you can see the path to trading some prospects for another starter and perhaps signing another one in free agency, which the Royals did in the past with Jason Vargas of the world, with Edinson Volquez before. You can see the path to finishing this team off. Because to me, that's what this offseason is going to have to be about, making it a team, right? We quote it all the time, making the trade that hurts, they're there. They're there. And if you don't want to say, and frankly, I want to redefine that, because we quoted that many times, because it was incredibly prophetic in 2012 when Jim Bowden said it to us, that the Royals are at a point where they got to make a trade that hurts. They got to trade some of these prospects for guys that finish off this team. And that's exactly what they did to get Wade Davis and James Shields, and they had to move Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi. It shouldn't hurt like the Royals, like it hurts for the Royals. I call it a trade that makes it fit. And I think the Royals, while their love of their players has certainly helped them, it is damn time for them to be more transactional. They have to be willing to part with some people, and they might have to be good people, like Will Myers. Just remember, if they were to move Salvador Perez or MJ Melendez to make it all fit, remember how, who's the number one prospect in baseball? All the consternation, all the complaining by smart people. Randy and I joke about it today on our Kauffman Corner podcast about how, you know, he was adamant that he didn't like that trade that they were making for Shields and Wade Davis. And today he's happy to admit that it was a good trade that it worked for the Royals. But remember the frustration, because I think it's coming this offseason. I think it better be coming. Let me put it that way. J.J. Piccolo, Dayton Moore, Mike Matheny, they better be ready to identify the guys that make this a complete baseball team and be ready to go out and make that deal. And that might mean trading Nicky Lopez or, you know, MJ Melendez or Chris Bubich or whatever it is, right? Because I'll say this, while there's a lot of encouraging signs, we gave the numbers yesterday. They're still 8-9 in their last 17, not 12-5. They're still being outscored by 12 runs, not outscoring the opposition by 12. There's still a lot of work to be done, and they're going to be what I think are important decisions and what for the Royals they will consider to be difficult decisions, but have to become just the order of doing business. Trading good players for other good players that create a complete baseball team. Let's take a break. We're going to bring Alec Lewis in here, talk some Royals baseball early and often. A lot of Chiefs football coming your way as we progress throughout the course of the day. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the program proudly brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson. And what about Worth? Not only is it the place with the biggest selection of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, new and used, not only is it the place that they'll trade for anything you got with a VIN number on it, trucks, cars, trailers, boats, ATVs, SUVs, you name it, they'll trade for it if you got a VIN on it. It's also the place where you can get tickets to the biggest bash in Kansas City this year. It's the WHB 100 Anniversary Bash. It's coming up Thursday night at the Midland. Can't buy tickets. Only way you can get them is to go where they are. And right now, starting at 4 o'clock, they're going to be at Worth Harley-Davidson. Northland, let's go. We got the ticket drop going on in your backyard. It's at one of the best places in Kansas City. Iconic location. We're talking about Worth Harley-Davidson. My guys, Rick Worth, Chris Guerin, and the guys, get over there. Get you some tickets. Check out those beautiful Harley-Davidson motorcycles. All the clothes, parts, accessories, everything you need. The Harley lifestyle, it's right there. Worth Harley-Davidson, it's 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road. That is just south of the Tiffany Springs exit on I-29 on the outer road, I-29 and Tiffany Springs, Worth Harley-Davidson. We're starting at 4 p.m. today. We've got tickets to the big WHB 100-year anniversary. Don't miss it. Don't miss your trip over to Worth Harley-Davidson.
As a boy growing up in Alabama, he dreamed of going to school at Missouri. Really?
What?
I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
Okay. Now he covers the Royals. He's Alec Lewis of The Athletic on the program.
And welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. As promised, we talk Royals baseball. Alec Lewis, our Royals insider from The Athletic. You know, he's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Alec knows this, but did you know the University of Kansas Health System now offers walk-in care for orthopedic clinics? That's right, located at 435 and all in Overland Park. Right there, diagonal from Topgolf and across the street from Shawnee Mission South. Ages 5 and up, you can just walk right in. 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Friday, treating anything, any orthopedic or sports injury, strains, sprains, fractures, dislocations, joint injuries. Trust the experts who care for the Royals, University of Kansas athletes, and thousands of middle school and high school athletes, even your Kansas City Chiefs. It is the University of Kansas Health System. Their walk-in clinic is open right now. That knee's barking at you? Go find out. Get the answers from the experts at the University of Kansas Health System walk-in clinic right there at 435 and Null. Alec Lewis, my friend, how are you?
I'm good, sir. My knee is not barking at me, and I'm amid a doubleheader. After, I think yesterday was the first off day. I think I've done 16 games, 16 days. Now we got a doubleheader, so I'm rolling. I mean, this is been a good stretch. No knee barking, so we're good.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
And thanks for being with us. We're excited to have you so close to the doubleheader getting started. We, of course, are looking forward to the Royals continuing this good play. We get a chance to see two more of the baby Royals, Brady Singer going in the first one, Brady Singer versus Lance Lynn in game one, Jonathan Heasley in the second one. Let's start with, it's kind of a question we kicked around yesterday for a little bit. I kicked it around with, David Leske on our podcast, our Kauffman Corner podcast on Sunday night. 8-9 against some good teams, right? At least solid to good teams in there mostly. If nothing else, expensive teams, even the Angels fall in that category, in that 8-9 stretch. How much are you buying that this team is turning a corner?
I think the lineup has been really good, and I think I'm buying just the type of talent that MJ Melendez and Bobby Wood Jr. and some of these guys are. I mean, Brady Singer, we'll see today, obviously, again, to continue to confirm what we've seen. But, I mean, I think I'm buying. Look, we expected – I think a lot of people in Kansas City, rational people, expected this team this year to be maybe a little bit below 500, a little around 500. They're playing like it against some good teams. They will play the White Sox and the Dodgers, two more good teams that will continue to provide the types of tests that I think we want to see. But, I'm buying the talent that these guys are. I mean, we've known since 2019 and the revamp of the hitting development department that guys like MJ Melendez, Nick Prado could hit. Vinny Pasquantino has really caught the eyes of the baseball world, and Bobby Wood Jr. is who he is. So these guys are talented, and you've got a healthy Salvador Perez back there. And I think that lineup has just seemed to do damage every night out. And the pitching, truthfully, has been lockstep with it over the stretch. I mean, I don't think the Red Sox are some juggernaut, and it seemed like they had a plethora of issues just to work through injuries and et cetera. So we'll see, but I think this type of 500, around 500 play is what we would expect it, and they're showing it.
I had a question. I'll give you a shot at it here, whether or not the Royals were late and bringing these young players up. I had somebody ask, if they had brought all the young guys up at the beginning of the year, would they be in contention for a playoff spot? I know what I said. I think you'll say something similar. What do you think for the fans that are like, hey, this is what I wanted to see all along. Why didn't I see this coming out of spring training?
No, I don't think they would be competing for a playoff spot. I can understand, though, why people would be asking that question, because if you watch the game specifically against Boston, I mean, the joy, the energy, you can see it. I mean, you can see it when you're in the clubhouse before games, you can see it during games just through the television. There's just a bit of a different energy, but for people wondering why they wouldn't have rolled with all these guys at the end of the season, I mean, I think one, you had veterans that you had committed money to in the form of Carlos Santana and Whit Merrifield and Andrew Benintendi. And so I think also, I mean, you wanted to see if these guys could continue to perform in the minor leagues and push their way to the top. And so, I don't know. I think it's easy to question timing and timelines, but I don't know. To me, it's just here we are now, and these guys are all here together. They're kind of feeding off each other, and I think that's a big part of it. Daniel Lynch said the other night, something that stuck with me after Nick Prado's walk-off home run. He's like, I know Nick's story. I know what Nick went through in 2019. I know how he worked to get to the player he is since then. And I think that type of just internal respect and appreciation is something that has shined through beyond just the energy itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are a couple of the guys that hadn't played above A-ball. I get the sentiment of the fans. I think sometimes just enjoy the moment. Right. I think the only when we talked about it for a while, Vinny Pasquantino is the one guy that I think you can have legitimate questions like, hey, he seemed to be putting up really good numbers for a while, but he's not blowing the league away right now. We feel good that when he makes outs, oftentimes they're very hard hit outs, which is a good sign, which means he's making good contact. But let's be clear. Vinny Pasquantino has not taken over the baseball world, say, the way an Aaron Judge did when he first landed in the big league. So, you know, I think, you know, it's hard when you get frustrated and you decide, okay, I don't want to hear from Dayton Moore or Mike Matheny or JJ Piccolo anymore because I'm frustrated. It's hard sometimes as a fan to go, you know what, but these guys are doing some things right. And I think the position player side of things, and we'll get to the pitching here in a minute, but the position player side of things, they seem to really have their arms around that, not only in how to fix hitters, get guys hitting, and you can look at Drew Waters hitting much better than he did with the Braves. They seem to be able to take other people's hitters, make them better hitters, and their process seems to be pretty good. I mean, there's still some kind of some low numbers around some of these young guys when you look at some of the stats that are there. These aren't the stats, you know, and I mentioned if you take what they've done since the All-Star break, which isn't all the youth movement, it has some Whit Merrifield and Andrew Benintendi games in there and Cam Gallagher before they were moved.
Salvador Perez is pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but my point is they're still on a pace since the All-Star break for scoring less runs than they scored last year. So it's not like, you know, when you're like, oh, we enjoy it because they're new and we feel like there's still upside, there's still ceiling there. So it's an enjoyable game. Even when they lose, we feel like we're watching the investment it takes to see what is the future, you know, playoff caliber team. But let's make no mistake about it. They're still not performing at a championship level. They're 8-9 in their last 17. They've still been outscored by 12 runs in those 17 games. So and that's not to try to throw a wet blanket on the excitement. Royals fans should be excited. There's a lot of good things going on. But the idea that somehow Dayton Moore or Mike Matheny or J.J. Piccolo has bumbled their way out of a playoff spot is preposterous, right? I think that needs to be said and understood by the fan base. And I think the success they're having with the position players, still more work to be done, but the success they're having with the position players deserves some appreciation from certainly the fan base. I mean, that's as simple as I can put it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks and like, I mean, I remember coming on this show in the spring of 2020, and this was months after I'd been in Arizona and I'd watched what they did on the hitting side. And I said then, and I'm not trying to, like, I don't know, make myself sound, but you could see that they were doing some forward thinking things on the hitting side back then. And and you could see the joy that some of the guys who were around some of these new hitting development staffers were having. And so it indicated that, you know what, like they've made some changes. They brought in some new voices. They've done some different type of process-oriented drills that seems to be making an impact. And now all these late years later, at the level that most people are watching, not the level where guys are in Arizona tucked away on the backfield, people are seeing that. And so I think you're exactly right that they do need to be celebrated and lauded for the types of changes they made. I'm still trying to figure out kind of what your previous comment, whether you're trying – are you excited? Are you not satisfied enough?
That's a good point. I think I maybe put too much in there and I should have broken it out into two things. I'm excited about where it's going. I think on the position player side and even some of the pitching, there's no doubt it's going in the right direction. And I think that's encouraging to see. And I think it's important to see for we talk about management moving forward. But I think the flip side is for the people that think that somehow a one or two decisions or call-ups are what kept us from being a playoff team. No, that's wrong.
Gotcha.
And so for the fans, they should not be thinking that they were robbed of a playoff year because they didn't call these guys up earlier. I think they've called them up at the appropriate time. But it's also to say that there is still work to be done. While I give credit to the work that's come forward, you know, the Royals talked about this season being a year that they thought they could be in contention or would certainly take a big stride. And I don't think it can go unnoticed. That was a mistake, right? They overplayed that hand. They were not close. And you know, maybe in private conversations, they never thought that. And they just knew that the fans' time, you know, they're if you're going to sell any tickets coming into this year, you had to pitch the fans on it and then hope that it came together quicker. Maybe they never thought that was going to happen. If they did, I still think they have work to be done as far as their ability to assess what they've actually got on the field.
Yeah, you know, I do think, Seren, that they thought they could be closer to contention this year and could actually compete for a wild card spot. And we talked about this. I mean, I remember speaking about the lineup and how similar it was to last year and believing that could lead you back to the wild card. It was going to take a lot of ifs to go the right way. We both talked about this at the time. And so I do think there has to be moving forward just an evaluation. And I wrote this right around the All-Star break, an evaluation of what are these players objectively. I know we believe in them. I know we drafted them. I know we developed them. But what are they and how capable are they of leading us to a certain result that we expect? I mean, I know the Royals analytics staff does projections on all their players. And I remember Dayton Moore saying at some point that like 90% of the projections are usually spot on, and it's the 10% of a guy who has a swing flaw that needs to be corrected that kind of makes the projections look wayward in the end. But I just think moving forward, you can see some of the pieces coming together, and we haven't talked so much about the pitching, but Brady Singer's obviously become much more consistent over this stretch. Brad Keller still seems back and forth with every start that he makes. Daniel Lynch has shown some solid flashes recently, and Chris Bubich has navigated his outing. So there's pieces here, but I still think as the offseason arrives, for as exciting as this stretch has been, there just has to be an objective kind of analysis of what you have, what you can spend, and how the roster looks next year to be honest about what's actually possible.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And what does the infield look like next year?
It's a good question. I mean, I think I would say Salvador Perez starts the season at catcher. I would say Nick Prado starts the season at first base. And the middle infield and third base is where it starts to get. I mean, you could start to move guys around. I mean, Michael Matthews looked really good at the plate since he's been up here, and he's performed obviously at a really high level throughout the minor leagues. Nicky Lopez has become he's one of the older guys in the clubhouse, and his leadership capability is something that even other young players have applauded. There's Bobby Witt Jr., who has struggled at shortstop defensively. I mean, the numbers just bear that out. And then there is Adalberto Mondesi, who has not been present. I mean, I haven't seen him in the clubhouse in probably 2-3 months. So there's a lot of moving pieces. I don't think they would give you a strict answer, just like last year they did not. And I don't know. I think for me, as much as Bobby Witt Jr. has struggled defensively at shortstop, I just still think for him to be the long-term answer there would probably behoove the club for the long term. So we shall see.
All right, so we shall. You mentioned, looking at the guys and getting it right. And you mentioned Bobby Witt Jr.'s defense. That's become a popular topic here of late. I almost feel like it's being spread. I wonder who's spreading it, why this seems to be such a conversation all of a sudden about Bobby Witt Jr.'s defense. But I wonder what the Royals think of his defense. Do you know what they think of his defense?
Well, I mean, I think they in terms of spreading, I mean, look, he's made a bunch of errors in the last few weeks and on pretty routine plays. And like I said, the numbers, the defensive metrics you can find on Baseball Savant and Fangraphs bear out that defensively just hasn't been stout. But I think what they think of the defense is that he can make the types of elite plays at shortstop that we've seen him make this year, and that with that, there's also like some of the rookie first year growing pains. I think they strongly believe in the defense. So they might have him play third base, considering, I mean, in recent weeks he struggled with, he had the hamstring injury, so I think they've taken it lightly with him from there. And they've also, over the last 3-4 years, really had a hard time finding a consistent third baseman. And so while I think they believe in the defense, they might also believe that he plugs that hole better than maybe anybody else they have. I think they believe in the defense.
Yeah,
they believe in it for sure.
Yeah, the trade, sorry to interrupt you there, Alec. I think when they move Rivera and the move that they made, when you've got a guy that's that controllable and has at least steadied the ship over there at third base, like I don't think he's an everyday third baseman in the big leagues, not on a championship club, but he can at least play the spot. When you move him for, another project arm, let's be honest, that's what Luke Weaver is. I think you're basically saying we've already got our third baseman. And when you look around and don't see a third baseman, it must be the kid playing short, right? Like that's the plan. Don't you have to tie those two together?
Yeah, maybe, but Emmanuel Rivera, and you just said it, like Emmanuel Rivera, I don't think is ever going to be a starting third baseman on a championship level team. And so while you may say that may lend itself to Bobby sliding right over, I mean, I think you could also argue that maybe there's an opportunity to sign a free agent third baseman at a cheaper cost than somewhere else, another position in free agency. I would probably side that Bobby Witt Jr. could play third base and could be that guy, but you never know. I just don't think the Emmanuel Rivera move signals that they've made some final decision. I just don't think Emmanuel Rivera is a guy that was going to be on a championship winning team.
I agree, and they started with Bobby Witt Jr. over there at third. I mean, I think this is another one where maybe we need to give him credit. Plan A was not Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop. right? That wasn't.
That's true.
And so maybe they accurately, just publicly saying, oh, great defense, blah, 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 blah. They knew all along, yeah, okay, he can play short, but is he a shortstop? Not unless we really crush the ball. And hence, they started with him at third. I think it does then open up, who is the shortstop? Right, I do believe Bobby Witt Jr. is the plan at third base. I think that's the plan. And, at least over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. If it's not, I will say this. If we see him running around the outfield next year, I don't understand how this team continually – I'll be disappointed yet again that they have brought somebody to the big leagues and then decided, oh, no, he plays someplace else. Like, that can't keep happening. Like the MJ Melendez thing. Like, where does he play? Where does he fit?
Well, where do you want him to play if Salvador Perez is pitching?
Well, I want him to make a trade, right? Like, at some point, this organization has to, let some little birdies go out and fly on their own, all right? And can't keep everybody around the nest like a mom who doesn't want to see anybody leave.
Okay.
At some point, it's got to fit together. So you can't have 2 first basemen and 2 catchers and 3 shortstops and – you got to make it fit. And I will say this, I think they're late to getting that done. And if they get it done this offseason, great, better a year late than never at all. But like at some point, is MJ Melendez bat? I had this conversation Sunday night. I remember being told when they were trying Billy Butler out in left field, the idea was that he would be a -1/+2. He'll be -1 out there defensively, but he'll be such a bat that it'll be okay. We'll live with it with him out there in left field. Well, MJ Melendez seems to have easy power. Like that would seem like a worthwhile thing to do. The easiest thing to do would be to trade one of them for their maximum value. That would be the thing that makes it work the easiest and get back something that you need, right? But barring that, it would be, I would think, when you're playing in single deck stadiums with 5,000 people, that would be the time to have a guy run around and let's find out if he can play the outfield, not in front of 35,000 in Fenway, even 15,000-20,000 at Kauffman against the Dodgers. So, I mean, I will, as much as I'm happy to praise them for all the success the young guys are having and how I think they've brought them along accordingly to their bat, they have not made the puzzle fit.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess my question would be, like, you have all of these bats in MJ Melendez, Vinny Pasquantino, and these are controllable, not expensive bats at the moment. Vinny Pasquantino, Nick Prado, Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, it's really hard to find, I think, these types of level bats at this type of cost. And so for them to try to now, I mean, now that their bats are big league ready, for them now, knowing they're not in a playoff race, to try to mix and match and give guys opportunities. Well, yes, you would prefer that MJ Melendez isn't diving in guaranteed right field and right field and missing a ball and the ball rolling to the pitch. You'd prefer that, but with where they're at, I mean, MJ Melendez doesn't lack confidence. So for him to be out there and playing, it doesn't seem like the worst situation. Now, as far as the trade goes, I mean, if this team decides and objectively looks at their roster and says we need a frontline starting pitcher and the best way to acquiring that is by trade, then that may be the route they go. But I think from what we've seen, it's hard for me to think that it would be an easy thing to trade a guy like MJ Melendez with what his bat has shown from the leadoff spot and the power. And then even from the first base perspective, you have a potential gold glove caliber defender at first, Nick Prado. Then you have a guy in Vinny Pasquantino who you mentioned hasn't been – I mean, the numbers aren't exactly there, but he's striking out so little and he's hitting the ball so hard that I think especially if the shift is banned moving forward, he could be just such a dangerous weapon. So for them not to trade guys, I know you said the nest thing, but to have this amount of talent, controllable talent, and to try to mix and match amid a few months where as much as they say they want to win, these games don't matter a ton, to me makes sense. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I battle this I seemingly all the time. I've done this for a long time, and it amazes me how when you're like, hey, tough decisions have to be made, and these guys need to make it. Nobody wants to get on board with that. And 3 years later, everyone will be like, it was so obvious what they should have done. Right. Like I do this all the time with contracts on whether it's Chris Jones or Tyreek Hill, telling people, listen, you can't keep them both. And Tyreek Hill's got to go. And everybody freaks out and loses their mind. And then they trade him and everyone goes, well, of course you had to trade him. Like, you know, after the fact, everybody's on board with the plan. Before the fact, it's like, ooh, geez, the water's pretty cold. I don't know that I want to swim in this. Here's my point. Like, I bring this up about how it doesn't fit, and everyone acts like, well, this is a phenomenon that just occurred overnight. How could we possibly know we'd have two first basemen? How did we know we'd had two catchers? I mean, how can you – I don't understand how the question can be how it's you know, unrealistic to expect the Royals to have figured out how it all fits in 3 months. It hasn't been 3 months. These guys have been in their organization. That's the big stat. They're all homegrown guys. Like, this problem has been there, looming. Now it's just this festering sore, right? Which isn't even that bad because people are buying into the young guys. But no, it's not a problem to have two good bats. It is a problem to have two good bats and not enough pitching. You know, that's the problem, right? And by the way, with all these bats, I continue to say they're performing at a level below last year's pace. So, you know, all these, like, in one hand, I hear about how it's just so great. Look at everything they have. And then the other one, you look at it and you're like, well, it's not adding up to success, really. There's still a lot of numbers to be had. So I guess my point is, you know, you've had all these shortstops and, you know, like, how long before they got to make it fit? Let me put it to you that way. Instead of me defending my position, when do you think it ought to all fit? That they ought to have a left fielder and a center fielder and a right fielder and a first baseman and a second baseman and a shortstop and a third baseman and a catcher and then good, you know, platoon guys or depth guys around the position. When should it fit? Like, when should Royals fans expect?
This upcoming year, because they expected to compete for the wild card this year and they didn't. So I would say next year it's a really important one. And I mean, look, I go back and forth because I obviously see your point, sir. And we've talked about the MJ Melendez thing and Salvador Perez, the catcher depth. We've talked about this now for a year plus. So I see it, and it makes me, it's like the college quarterback thing. Like, you got two. You're playing two, but do you really have one? Like, I see the point, but with this sport, I mean, depth is very important, and like, you're not going to find high end depth specifically with bats and controllable bats all the time in an easy capacity. So,
okay,
look, while I
go ahead, finish that up, and then let's take a quick break.
You go.
All right, well, let's take a quick break because I want to come back and I want to ask about let's talk about the catching spot specifically. But Alec Lewis is with us. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. We'll take a quick break, come back. Another one with Alec Lewis as the Royals doubleheader getting ready to go. He's got work to do. We still got questions to ask. We'll do that next here in the program. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we talk a little Royals baseball with Alec Lewis here in the program. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know that you can walk right in and see the same experts that care for the Royals, for the Chiefs, for hundreds, thousands of high school and middle school athletes all over the metro? That's right. Walk right in between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. Ages 5 and up, University of Kansas Health System now offers walk-in care for orthopedic injuries at 435 and all in Overland Park. Go see them today if you've got any problems going on in your life right now, ages 5 and up. Alec, we were talking about the catchers. You know, the Royals every year have preached and have delivered on the fact that every year they want to take catching. That Dayton Morris said it's a premium. We want to make sure that we're always investing in catching. And for the first time this year, you know, it finally paid dividends. They had what I think are three big league catchers on the team. Melendez's bat over is plenty for what the problems his glove brings. And there's optimism that his glove will be better when he kind of settles in. But Cam Gallagher's a legitimate catch and throw defender at the big league level for a team that has eight other bats in the lineup. You know, I guess that's my overall to the point that we were talking about making it all fit. When you plan, when you have a plan and then the plan comes through and you don't have the answer on how to make it, like, it's like they've preached catching all along. Now they have catching and they don't know what to do with it. Right? That scares me. They preach defense all along and they bring up their shortstop, you know, put him at third and now he's playing a short and he's not that good a defender, right? MJ Melendez is not that good. Like, philosophies got to be put in place, adhered to, and then put into action. And I guess that's where I'm like, I love all the youth that's coming up, and they're doing a lot of things right. It's still a bit of a head scratcher to me. And maybe it'll all be revealed. You said this offseason, I put it to you. I said, well, when does it have to fit? And maybe that's been the plan all along, and they will make it all fit. And I'll go, okay, they did it. You know, they moved this guy in this deal, and the Melendez is playing left field because that bat they've decided is going to be a 35 home run bat, and he can play well enough in left field. They give him some time, and he's going to be the opposite of Alex Gordon. He's going to be the big bat with serviceable, just hopefully serviceable out there defensively. And it all makes sense, right? But I guess that's my frustration is some of the plans, like the power pitching plan, that's not working. You know, those are the things that still scare me as we move forward. You delivered on the catchers, and you don't know what to do with them.
What would you do with them? Like, I could respond to this and ramble on, but you seem to have an idea. So I'm here to listen.
Well, I mean, for me, listen, I would have identified, I would have trusted my people that we had something in MJ Melendez and Cam Gallagher, and I would have traded Salvador Perez in 2018. And that he would have been part of a complete house cleaning. Whit Merrifield certainly wouldn't have been here. I would have moved him. I would have moved them all. This problem would have solved itself. MJ Melendez would be backed up by Cam Gallagher. I'd have an offensive catcher that played most of the games and a catch and throw guy behind him. And they'd be super cheap, and I'd have one of the better catching combos in baseball. That's what I would have done. So when you don't trade Salvador Perez, you have to have a different plan, and it has to come into focus. But I would have taken as much as I could get for everybody that wasn't nailed down, and I wouldn't have Salvador Perez here. I wouldn't have stayed the course with a guy that I knew was going to be in his 30s when we were coming back around to being good again. So this would not be a problem on my plate. And so I've been on the record with that since 2018. And so they've gone a different route. It's up to them to get it right.
Yes, that's accurate. They get paid to get it right. There's no doubt. But I do wonder, like, what Kansas City is, what people would think of. I mean, I know, obviously, it's easy to say now after Salvador Perez did what he did last year and has kind of become the face of
but finish your thought about what Kansas Cityans, finish what you were thinking.
No, I wonder what they would think of not having Salvador Perez now, like what people would think of not having Salvador Perez. I get, like, again, we've talked.
Let's try to answer that. Can we try to answer that? What do they think of having him based upon the numbers at the turnstile? What do they think of having him?
Well, I mean, based upon the numbers of the turnstile, obviously winning matters more than anything. But I think Salvador Perez means a lot to a lot of people in the city.
I agree. You know, if I've got room in my closet, those comfy old shoes that I love that I never wear, I love having them there. But when more shoes that I actually wear and that I need are there's no longer room for the comfy old shoes, they got to go. Right? Like, that's everybody.
I get your perspective. Like, I get trading a player at its maximum value to load the farm system with players who are gonna fit the timeline of the next contending team. But they didn't do that. So here we are now. Mm-hmm. And at this point, like, you could ask, do you try to trade Salvador Perez now? Well, he's got a really big contract now. Do you trade MJ Melendez? Well, he's honestly as the type of bat that he's proven to be over the last few weeks, like, I mean, the value, I guess, is exorbitant, but he's also a guy who I think could help you win a lot of games. And so, here we are now. It's easy to look back and say you said this. It really is. But I don't know. That's kind of what I want. That's why I asked, what would you do? You went back to 2018. But I kind of wonder, from here on, what would you do?
Well, and I think that's my – and I'll answer that. I'll say this. My overall point is the philosophical part. Right. Like, that's where I don't question that they can develop hitters and they can jam them up here. But then there's another layer to that, like making them all fit. And then there's the other layer of building the team. And, you know, those parts I still very much question right here. And we've saved you know, the pitching side this time, and just talked about the position players. But I do think it's an important part of the equation. Now, it can be fixed in this offseason. Their history doesn't say that they're going to go out and move three of these guys. And that's the other aspect of it is, again, I'm working from where I see a reason to be frustrated if you're a fan is when Dayton Moore says to me in 2018, we want to build it back to where we're there for the long haul. Right. We don't want to have windows and where we crash really hard like this. I want to build it back to where we can sustain the winning. Well, six guys in 1 year are coming up. What do you think it looks like 6 years from now? Right. If all these guys are legit, it's going to be an even harder crash than it was last time.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, so much can change. I don't know. It's 6 years from now. It's a crazy deal. But I mean, I do think like there's reason to ask questions of like, a guy like Whit Merrifield, if his value was highest in 2019 and 2018, why not move him then? And then if the answer is because we thought he would give fans a reason to come, I mean, then there obviously are reasons to ask questions when a team has been as bad as they've been this year. And yes, this recent stretch has been exciting. It's been fun. It's been reinvigorating for a lot of people. They're obviously they haven't met the level that I think everybody expected, and so there's reason to ask a lot of different questions. So it's understandable.
All right, I know you've got work to do and a ball game to cover, so let's get to our Final Four. It too is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Royals and Chiefs. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Your World Series pick is who over who right now?
Oh wow. Good question. Man, I'm going to take the Yankees over the Dodgers and just go huge brand names, incredible World Series, Yankees over Dodgers. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Who plays more games at first base in their career for the Kansas City Royals, Vinny Pascantino or Prado?
Prado.
Okay.
Actually, no. Vinny.
I'm going to go Vinny.
Sorry.
That's all right. I just put the X through that one. Does Salvador Perez finish his career here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That's a big yes on that. And what do we get out of this doubleheader? Two wins, two losses, a split?
Split.
Yeah, that's Pete Rose.
Singer, I think Brady Singer would be really good. Second game, it's kind of a hodgepodge. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, split.
Pete Rose told me a long time ago, you should just give each team a win and give us the day off. There's no point in even playing these things. It's usually that way. So you took the math. I'm proud of you, Alec. Alec Lewis from The Athletic does a great job. We appreciate it, Alec. We'll let you go, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.
All right, Serena Williams has won 10 Grand Slam titles after turning 30. What two players are tied for second on that list? Grand Slam titles after 30. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen.